Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Now, texts that should be said, of course, if you are in a theatre performance and you are listening to this, you should not be listening to this and you certainly shouldn't be sending texts. Am I right, Dervil Duggan?
Indeed you are, Colm. Yes, I wrote a letter to the Irish Times on Monday this week about my experience at the Weir last Wednesday, when two ladies in front of me seemed to be living in their own world. So one of them 12 times opened the cover of her phone and dazzled us all. I suppose she was checking for a message, but I counted 12 times she interrupted our enjoyment.
12.
And her friend, 12 times, I counted it. And I could see the time on her phone. I could see everything that was on her home screen. And I was quite worried, like, was she going to get a message? And if she got the message, would she just ring the person back? Would she get up and leave and disrupt everyone? Would she send a text? She didn't do any of those things. Thankfully, she mustn't have got the message she was waiting for. And the lady she was, I think she was with, was sitting in front of me. And at one particularly dramatic moment, when Brendan Gleeson's character was pouring out his heart about the girl he should have married back in the day. And
the Brendan Gleeson, the national treasure, the beloved Brendan Gleeson. Brendan Gleeson, who has had the power and the charisma to intervene not only in political debates, but he has been the star of Paddington, obviously the star of The Banshees of Inisherin, Oscar nominated, and, you know, many other things. He's taken back to the stage again, and he's there. By the way, just and I'm sorry to cut across here, these were not easy tickets to get.
They weren't. In fact, no, I didn't get them at the very beginning, and I had to go searching through every single night it was on to get four tickets for my family.
And not cheap tickets.
Yes. They weren't too cheap. No, they certainly weren't. Not at all. But anyway, Brendan Gleeson was there, great man that he is, and he was pouring out his heart about basically how he's been left a lonely old man because he didn't follow the girl of his dreams to Dublin and all this. And everyone listening, almost everyone listening attentively, when the lady in front of me, I saw her putting on her reading glasses. I could see the glow of her phone all around her hair. And she proceeded to send a text message. So the man sitting beside her, I could see him looking down at her phone in horror. And he had to turn his back to her so that he could see the stage without having to have be dazzled by her phone.
Right, because your eyes adjust to the stage light and you're kind of going to get slightly blinded by a bright light in the distance. I mean, look, I can only think of one excuse why she would take out her phone and in a new working of the play, maybe the lady who ran away on Brendan Gleeson and went to Dublin, he didn't follow her, was going to text him from the audience and going, it's okay, I'm on my way back. But, you know, in the absence of that dramatic change to the Weir.
Figure that out. Yes, it is really something else, and it's not the first time we've come across this. That the same night, numerous mobile phones rang in the audience. One of them, the person took quite a long time to find their phone and turn it off. Then we have the eating and the munching and the opening of the wrappers and whatever.
Oh, really?
But I do find
And I mean, I don't mean to discriminate between forms of entertainment, but I thought that was, you know, part of the acceptable atmospheric noise of in pantomime. I didn't think the sort of audible mastication of Scots Clan and Emerald sweets and the clicking of orange barley against the back teeth was an acceptable soundtrack to a stage performance of such subtlety.
I don't think you'd get it in the gate, let's say, but for some reason, it seems to be there aplenty in the Olympia at the moment. And it's just quite shocking how people, these ladies were not young ladies, like there were no mobile phones around when they were younger. And yet they're so much in their own world and feel so entitled that they just don't appreciate anyone around them. They don't respect the actors on the stage. And I think it's quite shocking. And right. Since I've had the letter published and friends of mine have been in contact in that, and it's amazing the amount of people who are absolutely frustrated that theatres don't do enough to do something about these people who just take out their phone when they feel like it.
Right. I mean, why do you think the behaviour would be any better in the gate than it is in the Olympia?
Oh, no. It's the north side, maybe?
Right. The Northsiders know how to behave themselves.
That might be it. Yeah. No, I really couldn't tell you, except that I have been to the gate quite often and I've never seen anyone take out a phone there. Now, maybe they have, but I think maybe the plays are... I think this play, maybe it's the issue that there were very famous actors in this play and maybe it attracted people who might normally go, but I'm really not sure because I see people taking phones out at all different kinds of events when it's utterly inappropriate and disrespectful to do so.
Right. Now, I note from your letter that you were tempted to remonstrate with the people concerned.
Well, the play is an hour and 40 minutes without an interval. So there is no opportunity to speak to a person at the interval, and I would never tap someone on the shoulder because you don't know how they're going to react. They could get quite angry and disrupt everybody more and make a lot of tension. So I did hope to speak to these ladies on the way out, but they scuttled off as fast as they could and I wasn't able to speak to them.
Okay. Well, you are, they may be listening now. What would you have said to them?
Bearing in mind,
it's not after it. We're not after 9 o'clock yet. So, but anyway, go on. What would you have said to them?
Well, no, I would be quite polite, to be honest, at the best of times, and I would just say to them, like, do you realise that you checked your phone 12 times, and every time you distracted me and other people around you, or to the other lady, like, do you realise that you send a text message in the middle of the play and distracted people? Because I actually wonder if they do realise what they're doing.
Now, OK, let's allow for the possibility that, you know, somebody got a ticket for the play. Something came up at the last minute. Their babysitter let them down. Somebody who had not babysat their child was stepping into the breach and they were worried something was going on in the background. Or, you know, something had happened to somebody and they wanted to keep an eye on their phone in case they were needed and had to make a quick exit. What would your advice to them be in that case?
My advice would be don't go to the theatre if you're not sure that you're going to be able to enjoy it in peace and allow the people around you to do the same. If an issue is so important, you know, what are you going to do if you get the message that your child is not able to go to sleep or something? Are you going to disturb all the people in your row and leave?
No, I suppose
I have no sympathy, sorry, with people like that. That's crazy.
You could live blog advice to the babysitter from the floor of the theatre. Anyway, even if you had remonstrated with them, Dervil, they may have just taken out their phone mid-remonstration and started checking for texts, which, you know, I think I began the programme here talking about the need for civilised discourse and the defence of opposing ideas. You might have reached your tipping point at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think all you can do in a case like that is you have to be diplomatic enough. You don't know how people might react to you. Some people get very angry when they're confronted with the fact that they've basically interfered with other people's right to enjoy the play, not to mention the disrespect to the actors. And some people can be quite get quite aggressive when they're confronted with their failings like that. And so you have to be quite careful.
Okay, well, I mean, look, if there is any staunch defender of the practice of texting in a theatre and the rationale behind it and the need to check a phone in the theatre, we'd love to hear from you on 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps or 51551 for your texts. If you were in the theatre and you think you might be that person and you'd like to apologise to Dervil for that, you can get us on those same numbers. But the view from the stage, Edward Hayden, what is the behaviour like in the audience, in your wide experience of being on stage and seeing audiences?
Good afternoon, Colin. Well, listen, I read Dervil's letter during the week on the paper with glee because I was so delighted that someone had committed their thoughts to word to put it into the paper. And I suppose, you know, in reiterating Dervil's point there, what it really is it's a kind of a lack of common courtesy. So courtesy that you're affording to the audience members. And bearing in mind that when we go to the theatre as an audience, and I can give it to you from both sides, when you go to the theatre as an audience, the invitation that's extended to you is to suspend disbelief. So you need to transport yourself to wherever it is. So whether it's the Civil War of Juno and the Peacock, whether it's 1930s Inish Man, or whether on this occasion you're going to find out the story of Valerie as she heads to this pub on this given night to meet those four men. You're asked to suspend suspend disbelief. And by all of this action happening around you, you can't do that. And I suppose what it does for an audience is it makes them very cognizant that they're at a play in a theatre with other people. Whereas if you can be allowed to immerse yourself so fully in the play, you actually get to a stage that you don't even realise you're there. You could be in the theatre on your own. And that's where the real magic happens.
Okay. And it takes people, a bit of effort from all of the people involved. They obviously aren't going to be using 3D CGI technology, but the people who make the sets to set the scene, the actors who need to capture the attention of the audience within seconds of coming on stage, there's an awful lot of work and rehearsal and everything goes into that to establish that rapport and suspend that disbelief from the very first seconds of a play. Would that be fair to say?
Without doubt. And they have done that for your enjoyment as an audience member. And your invitation is, as I said, to immerse yourself in it. Now, to do that then, or to not do that, I suppose, is just a lack of courtesy. Because, and like the lady, the Dervil said there, you know, if there's a situation that your life is so stressful that you can't afford that 90 minutes to kind of completely immerse yourself, then the theatre is not the space right for you. Now, again, I suppose from an acting point of view, that is depending on the theatre.
Let's lay out your credentials, Edward, because you are with the New Ross Drama Workshop, the Duisk Players and the Ballycogley Players. Is that the right? You've been with all of these groups. Yeah. So, I mean, you've a lot of experience of amateur drama.
Plenty of experience of amateur drama, and particularly with two of those groups, we compete on the drama circuit, competing to end up at hopefully the All Ireland finals.
Sure, and in case anyone mistakes amateur drama as, you know, anything other than top class, the finals are, as you say, extremely competitive, and to an extremely high standard, and known for that. I mean, a lot of, you know, well known household names trod the boards in amateur drama before they ever went professional.
Without doubt. And I mean, I suppose the minutiae that an amateur drama group look at in terms of exposing every nuance of the play, every aspect of the play is, you know, unquestionable. The standards that's out there in drama, whether you're bringing drama to your community, which essentially is what drama was made. Drama was meant to be shared. It can't happen in isolation.
Right.
There's an exchange. It's an exchange between the audience and the players and the crew and everything like that.
But the competitive element to it, I mean, apart from the etiquette, apart from the lack of consideration in the normal course of a performance that's been put on for the enjoyment of a community where the amateur dramatic group is based, in the competitive atmosphere, a phone going off in the audience is, I suppose, to struggle for an analogy here, is like a streaker running onto a football pitch in the middle of a competitive match.
Absolutely, because what it's doing is it has the capacity to take the players out of their experience as well, because you're now, and I mean, obviously, we're also prepared with responding to situations, but this isn't a situation that you're expecting, because from the minute you sit into the theatre, it's inculcated into you to kind of burn off your phone.
Right.
But a funny thing happened to us a number of years ago. We were doing a competitive play. It was a two-hander called Spectre, which is a beautiful piece by Don Negro, set in the front seat of a car. So it's a very intimate space. We were in a very intimate 60-seater theatre being assessed for competition. And a phone went off, and the phone went off and off and off and off and off. And we kept playing, and, you know, we knew the script so well. We knew what we had to do so well. We just kept playing. And at the end, the adjudicator, now really, you were talking about remonstration. Certainly, there were spoken about from the stage from the adjudicator. Right. But anyway, that's fine.
But that's the difficulty, is it? The difficulty, the phone goes off, the person whose phone is going off is mortified. They hope the phone will ring off and they won't be rumbled. So they allow it to ring in the hope that it'll go off after five rings, rather than means the person who fumbles it and then brings the illuminated phone to light out of their pocket, thus outing themselves as the interrupter in chief.
Well, this very nice man, about a month after the competition, we got a letter to our local theatre, and he said that he was the owner of the phone. So it was a letter of confession that he was the owner of the phone. He had an alarm set for medication. And obviously the alarm, as we all know from our alarms on the phone, will kind of override any functionality of silencing it.
Right.
So the alarm went off and he was mortified. And he sent a most beautiful letter, a very contrite letter. And he enclosed, if he is listening, this is 2017, he enclosed a tenner. And in 2017, Colm, a tenner would have bought you two drinks. So he asked for me, because he had my name from the programme, he asked for me to get myself and my co-star Shona a drink each.
Right.
As a mark of apology. So
did you progress to the next round? I mean, was it a key factor in not progressing, or did you progress to the next round?
No, on that night we did. We actually won that round of the competition and we progressed with that stage to the All-Ireland finals.
Fair play
that year were held down in beautiful Kilmuckridge in County Wexford. It was a one-act final. But listen, we all know that it happens, but what I would say to people listening today, it's happening more frequently than it should happen.
Okay.
So everything is unavoidable.
And is it just phones?
Really, phones are a big thing. I mean, I don't think...
Derville mentioned sweets there. I mean, do you hear sweets being chewed or rattled or packets being opened
really
to the audience?
Haven't really experienced that to the same degree. I suppose the other thing I would say is latecomers are a big malady to a performance as well. So if you go off at the interval and you go for, whether it's a mug of tea or you go for a drink or whatever you go to the toilet, you know, get back on time before the play starts. A lot of theatres, obviously, it's difficult to police in terms of latecomers. But by you shuffling in, just say you're in D13. Well, D13 is slap bang in the middle column.
Right.
So regardless of your approach from the left or to the right, you're disturbing D1 to 12 or D24 to 13 to get yourself in.
Okay.
And they have to stand up. So it's almost like a Mexican wave from row D, which the actors are going to be aware of. There's all the seats going up. Someone will be kind of breathing or exhaling with exasperation. And all of that changes the moment. So
okay,
I suppose it all boils down to common courtesy.
So until somebody dramatises Italia 90 and a Mexican wave in the audience is a key part of the performance, could the person in seat D13 please get back to their seat on time? Gracie, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. You've been tuned in. You were listening to Derville at the top there.
I was. I just want to maybe give a wee bit of a different perspective of it. I'm a mother of a child with complex needs. So if I'm lucky enough, and it's a very rare thing to get to the theatre or get to the cinema, my phone, I am checking my phone. I am that parent. I am that lady that she was talking about. I will be checking that phone because my son has a tracheostomy, and if that tracheostomy comes out, then it's panic stations. So I need to check that phone. And it becomes second nature, I think, as a special needs parent as well, that you're always checking. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is I understand the annoyance. I was that person. People kicking your seat, stuff like that.
Mm.
But I try to be a wee bit more tolerant now and just think that maybe there's another side to it. Maybe there's a reason. And I know the lady did say then if you're not sure you shouldn't be going out. I would never be out if I was to live my life that way.
Right. Because we've talked to parents before where respite can be very difficult to get. The family members who, you know, the people who are equipped to be able to deal with the needs of somebody with complex needs are few and far between. So you what you're saying is you need to grasp the opportunities when they come for the sake of your general well-being and your ability to care full time.
Yeah, to have some kind of normal. But that does not mean you become a helicopter mommy. And even if the person that's with your child is far more qualified than you are, you're always worrying, you're always checking that phone. It has become second nature. So I suppose what I'm saying is I understand her annoyance, absolutely. As I said, I was that person. But there's always another side. And I think we just maybe need to be just a wee bit more tolerant and maybe think on that side of things
okay
as well.
So maybe people...
Okay.
maybe people in a bygone era wouldn't have gone out in the absence of a mobile phone and taken an hour and 45 minutes without checking that they may have made that choice that Dervil was talking about. Whereas the advantage of a mobile phone, from your point of view, is that you can go out and if need to be contacted, you can make that call to cut and run if an emergency arises.
Yeah, and even if, you know, the lady was saying that, sure, what can you do? Are you going to, you know, to give a demonstration over the phone? Probably in three lines of a text, I could reassure the person that's with my child, or I could say, no, this is what you do. So I'm not disagreeing completely with what she said. I feel that way when I'm in the cinema as well. But just there is another side, and people do have, you know, things going on in their lives that none of us know anything about, that, you know, just maybe sometimes suck it up.
Take a breath.
Try and focus.
All right.
Try and focus on what you're there to watch and try and enjoy it.
Okay, Gracie, okay? I know time's not against enough. You, so we're going to take a break and get to a few more calls in a sec.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Now, plenty of people want to get in on the conversation about phone use in theatres and cinemas. 51551 for your texts on that, and 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps. Orla, you think you might have a remedy?
Well, I've heard of a great remedy. How are you, Colin? Just to say, I really sympathise with Grace, who was just on there as well. I have a friend who'd be in a similar position, and I totally get both sides of that argument. And generally, sometimes it's a question of finding the right seat for yourself, you know, at the theatre where you're not in the front row, etc. But I was recently, I work in storytelling and I have a background in theatre as well. I was down at the Cape Clear International Storytelling Festival, which is an amazing experience to go to.
And now, before you tell me this story, you're not obliged to begin with the words for though, are you?
I'm not obliged.
No,
we can go modern with this one.
Okay, fire away.
But there's a lovely rule there. Well, storytelling in general has quite, I think the difference is the audience is very much in the room with you. So people kind of forget they're watching live people on the stage sometimes, because we're so used to screens and watching a film. And, you know, the people on the stage can see you, as your earlier caller mentioned. But in Cape Clear, there's a little gentle announcement at the beginning of the show that if your phone goes off during the performance, you will be obliged to buy the organiser of the show a bottle of champagne.
Great.
And it's not cheap to get a bottle of champagne on the island.
What's so the going rate for a bottle of Bali on Cape Clear?
I'm not going to say, because they'll probably up the prices then, you know, we'll just keep it. But it's a lovely human reminder that, look, these people are up on stage. It's, you could hear a pin drop, like, in the middle of the performance. And I think, in general, because I've worked in scripted theatre and I've had phones go off, just to say to Dervil, phones have gone off in the Abbey for sure, you know, when I've been on the stage. So I, you know, there's accidents happen, right? But I think texting for a chat or like reading your phone, I've seen people scrolling in the theatre. And I totally get Grace's point. I have a friend with a special needs child. And she will go out and she will sit, kind of, she'll choose an aisle seat and she'll be back a bit from the stage if she's going to a scripted thing. And she'll kind of discreetly look at her phone. And I don't have a problem for that, because the actors can't see her from the stage and she's being as discreet as possible and doing it quickly. It's not like she's checking her Facebook or her messages. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But the scrolling bit is the difference, isn't it? Somebody looking to see
Absolutely.
If there's any text alerts by a quick look at the screen might be one thing. But somebody who's opening content and scrolling something completely different is maybe somebody who should maybe seek help with their phone usage.
Yeah, or recording. Like we have a festival in Galway called Moth and Butterfly. We have a storytelling festival. And we just say, turn off your phones and please don't record. And we don't do photographs at our show. We don't do, unless there's a photographer designated. Because, you know, with storytelling, it's a little bit more casual. You're very intimate. There's no fourth wall. You're chatting to the audience. But because of that, in a weird way, they're more engaged. People forget to look at their phones. And, you know, say, look, I often say when I'm doing something, I say, look, there'll be a break in a few minutes. If you want to go out while I'm introducing the next person or go and get a drink or whatever, it's casual, but give your focus to the person on the stage, please.
Right. Otherwise, because, it's champers, you know, time.
Yeah, otherwise it's... Well, we don't... I should actually bring in
you
the champers ruler, maybe a nice bottle of red.
Well, bring a case, you know, around with you. Maybe one of those cooler bags with, you know, the champagne in it or have it sold in the theatre bar at the front. Why Moth and Butterfly, by the way, Orla? What's, where does the name come from?
It's the moth style of storytelling would be personal stories, and the butterfly is improvisation. So we tell folk tales and personal stories, and we've a night in Galway every couple of months, but we've a festival every Bridget's weekend. So if you come down, just put the phones in the pocket and go out and check them at the interval. And you know, you made a point there about, you know, the length of time. I mean, if somebody's in a match or at Wimbledon, there's been loads of controversy recently about, you know, somebody shouting in the middle of a match at Wimbledon. Mm. And that, like you mentioned, somebody streaking across the field. And, you know, it is, it does distract not only the performers, but the audience as well.
The performing streaker might argue that the football is getting in the way of their performance. But, you know, we know whose side the majority is on that one.
We would go with that as well. But there is a bit of common sense, you know, I wouldn't say to somebody, never go out if you're really worried about something. You know, my friend would have her phone on very low vibrate and she'd be up near an exit kind of a seat at the back of a theatre. But there's a very different thing depending on what, if you're going to a music gig, it's a very different thing where you're at the back. Like some musicians will have you know, put your phones into pouches. There's that whole thing. And some performers will do that. Mm. You know, those electronic pouches where you hand them in or whatever. That's a whole other argument there.
Grouches on their pouches. And schools have signed up with them now. All right. Thanks, Orla. Teresa, good afternoon to you.
Hi there, Colin. How are you?
Good. Yeah, we've done the Olympia now, and Orla has talked to us about the Abbey. We're off to the Helix. Yeah, go for it.
We're off to the Helix. So we're seeing an Eagles tribute band, and they were absolutely amazing. But about three people away from me was a lady who was constantly on her phone, and I'd swear it would have beaten the 12 of the first one of the Weir. But anyway, I decided at the intermission that I would say something because it was really not ruining my night. The music was amazing, but it was distracting my night. So I actually, she had obviously gone out for a break or maybe out to check her phone. Mm. And I spoke to who I maybe thought was her partner. And she said, look, our daughter is, well, I think he said ours, but anyway, her daughter was in labour. Now,
oh God,
I mean,
right. Okay.
Years ago, I had babies, but like in the late 80s and early 90s. I wouldn't have even contacted my mum to say I'm actually gone into the hospital because, first of all, you don't want to be panicking somebody at home. And the first phone call was made was when the baby arrived the next morning and I'd been in the hospital the whole night. So I don't know, mobile phones have made people too accessible. And I think
you're bringing up two issues there. One of them is phone use in a theatre and then the appropriateness of blow-by-blow updates when somebody is in labour. I mean, what do you want? You disagree with the idea of the, you know, centimetre-by-centimetre dilation live blogging, is it?
Possibly. And even like if I had a mobile phone in 1989, I wouldn't have been texting anybody because I would have been so focused on the job I had to do that night or whatever. So, I mean, in all honesty, having a phone in the theatre, it's not fair. And like if you were in the gate, they always make an announcement and it's like they give a round of applause actually to that lovely guy who does the announcements because he's so polite about it. I think he does a reminder after the intermission. Right. Now, mind you, the gate was the one where Ralph Fiennes told somebody during Faith Healer to turn off the effing phone. So even the gate hasn't always got it right.
And but look, when Lord Voldemort is telling you to turn off your effing phone, you want to turn your effing phone off.
Well, anyway, just I think that the Bord Gáis has it right, by the way, because as far as I'm aware, you can't use your phone within the theatre, that whatever way they have Wi-Fi or whatever, your phone won't actually work in the Bord Gáis, and I think that's the best thing. And then let people check at the intermission. Now, I would be sorry for the lady.
Yeah, what about Gracie earlier who said, look, if the choice is between go out or don't go out, you know, go out and check, be able to check your phone or don't go out at all and you don't get out much.
Well, and I think she should be able to go out, but one of your earlier callers also suggested, you know, sit where you're not going to be a distraction. Sit near the exit. Because just say if Grace's childminder contacted her to say that something has happened, it's going to take more than a three-line text to, you know, comfort that person.
Okay. Well, I mean, she says she can do it. I mean, to remove it, I suppose, from that personal experience alone, she says she can do it in three lines. We have to, you know, take her at face value that she can do it in three lines. But, you know, in that situation where somebody is having to choose between... Yeah. Anyway, as we heard from Orla, maybe leave your phone on vibrate and sit at the edge of the road. Okay, thanks, Teresa. Breda, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colin.
What's your take on this?
My take, I suppose it just pressed a few buttons for me, the initial caller, because, well, there's two reasons I contacted, really. One, I'm a parent to two autistic children, so I never, ever have the luxury of turning my phone off. Now, in an entertainment setting, I would have it on mute and I would have my screen light dim. But, you know, we all can't just suspend reality for an hour and a half. And similar to the previous caller, you know, if it's stay at home all the time or get out on a very, very rare occasion with your phone accessible to you, you know, everybody needs to get out. And I suppose married to that idea then is, you know, people with different neurodivergent conditions and presentations, you know, there has to be space in a theatre for people who have to stand up and sit down, who have to move, who may have a tiny little bit of verbal stimming, things like that. You know, I just really wanted to contact the show to broaden the argument, really, that, you know, we all can't be the same and present the same. And I know somebody might suggest, you know, a neurodivergent friendly screening or an autism friendly screening, but that's not always the same experience. You know, sometimes it is nice to go to a mainstream gig or a mainstream play and, you know, access it and enjoy it with due consideration to everybody around you, of course.
And you find that, you know, as you say, you feel you don't have the luxury to turn off the phone for an hour and 45 minutes. No. You need to be constantly in contact with whoever is holding the fort at home, is it?
Sure, or even if the kids are in respite or they're with carers or whatever, you're bound really by ethics and stuff else to be at all times contactable. I can get called out of work meetings to come get a child who's not having a good day in school or whatever. So I just really wanted to shed that perspective on it, really, that it's not as, you know, straightforward as one might think.
Would you liken it to almost being sort of doctor on call, Breda, that at any point the pager could buzz and that's it, you're gone, but you can't sit at home in a room waiting for the phone to ring either?
Yeah, and I suppose similar to a previous caller there, you can, if you know, you can sometimes sort it out with three lines in a text. You know, especially children with autism, it might be just a little step in the routine that was missed or broken, and three lines and you can set things to right again and you can continue with your evening. So it is, it's vital, really. First to get out for our mentality, but also to be contactable at all times.
All right. Yeah. Claire, you're talking of noise in of a different kind.
Hi, yes, Colm. Yes, not mobile phones at all. I was at a play in the Gate earlier this year, and it was Shakespeare. And you know yourself, you have to tune your ear to Shakespeare. It's not exactly everyday language.
Okay, so we had a sentiment being expressed at the top of the show. Bad things don't happen in the audience in the Gate. But anyway, you beg to differ on this occasion. Go on,
I do have to disagree. The people behind me were making noise. People in front of me were making noise. Two people to my right were eating sweets out of a sweet packet, which they were taking out of their bag and passing back and forth between the two of them. And then across the aisle, somebody was coughing. And I mean, I've been at the theatre. I've been at concerts with a tickle in my throat or a mild cold. I cough into my sleeve. I cough into a scarf. I do something to muffle it. That individual was coughing full blast. And I couldn't hear the performers. I couldn't catch all of what they were saying, and I actually left at the interval, and I'm not going to the theatre anytime soon. And I wanted to see Brendan Gleeson, and I wanted to see another play this summer, and I just thought, no, going to the theatre is a treat, and I'm not going to waste my money if I can't hear what's being, you know, what's going on stage.
And was the cougher also the sweet eater, and was the sweet eater,
no,
was
no,
the sweet
no,
a cough sweet?
No.
Oh, no. Why didn't the sweet
can't
eater
sure
offer the
that.
Coffer one of the sweets? At least they might
they
have.
Would have had to get up and move about five seats. I think we had enough disruption that evening while I had that going on as well.
Still, it might have calmed the cough down if they gave them one of their whatever the sucky
done.
Sweets
it
were. Yeah, and
it
so you
done.
Haven't been back anyway. That's
no.
You're just.
And I did actually go up to one of the staff members about it, but anyway, they also, you know, they sent emails afterwards. asking the audience to give feedback on performances and whatever. Right.
So you cracked your knuckles and sat down at the keyboard and gave them strongly worded feedback, did you?
I'm polite about these things. I just said, you know, you make an announcement about mobile phone usage. Could you please ask people not to eat in the auditorium? It's just a little thing. It doesn't happen. Things were different. I think audiences are becoming more self-absorbed, and we're living in our little bubbles, and we're not thinking about the impact that our actions are having on the people around us, or even on the cast. I mean, it can't be easy to memorise that script and then hear noise in the auditorium. It's got to be off-putting.
Right. And could you tell from the noise whether they chewy or sucky sweets, or, you know, could you hear them being chewed or consumed as well?
I'm not an audio technician, Colin. Right. I'll pass on that question.
Okay. What was the performance, by the way? What Shakespeare was it?
King Lear. It was King Lear.
All right.
And I'd like to have heard all of it, but I left at the interval.
For sure. There's a key scene where one of the actors puts, somebody gets their eyes gouged out in that particular play. I'm sure it's the audience members making noise. Lucky it didn't turn into art, life imitating art in the audience.
God, no. There's enough trouble in real life without violence in cinemas and theatres as well.
That's it. Dennis, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you. Just listen to the conversation. I'm pleading with management of theatres to introduce the pouches for phones. The whole thing is an absolute scourge. To carry on with people with their phones.
And would you be a regular theatre goer, Dennis?
Absolutely.
Yep.
All the time.
And how prevalent all would you time. Say it is? Have you been? I mean, can you think of a performance where there hasn't been phone use?
I can't give you an example. I recently went to Dionne Warwick in Vicar Street, and the guy next to me is watching a hurling match on his phone. Now, it's complete and utter.
He was being brought along by somebody else, was he?
I've no idea, but he was watching. All he was interested in was watching the hurling match on the phone, right beside me.
Right.
In the end, I just had to move away.
Did he have the sound on?
No, he hadn't the sound on. He was just watching the action, but he was putting it on and off all the time. And you could if you're in the theatre and someone lights up their phone, you can see, you know, especially with the theatres because they dim the lights, you can see the phones activating. We are very, very poor when we go to the theatre, or in general, we're very, very poor. That lady there summed it up, in my opinion. We don't seem to consider other people or people who've paid hard-earned money to a performance. I go to the theatre, I want to watch the performance. By all means, have a drink, whatever floats your boat. But this idea of being up and down and in and out with drink and all that sort of thing, it ain't for me.
Right. And I mean, do you take on board what Gracie and Breed has said, that, you know, sometimes you have to be there to advise somebody who is giving care in your stead to somebody with complex needs, and to be expected not to be on hand, to be in contact, is effectively a choice between having a social life and not having a social life?
That's a very difficult question to answer. I can't answer that question because I haven't been in those positions. The only positions I've been in is where I've gone to the theatre and you're really taking your life in your hands, wondering what exactly is going to kick off during the performance. Will they turn their phone off? Will they behave themselves? You just don't know. Okay. If you go to the South Bank in London for a concert and you leave your seat to go to the bathroom, they won't allow you back in if there's a song being played on the stage by the artist. They keep you outside.
Until that song is over.
Yeah, yeah. It's people pay their hard-earned money. They go to be entertained. They don't want to be going watching people videoing on their phone, checking their messages, scrolling through their messages. It's just nonsense.
Watching the hurling.
Yeah, watching the hurling. Could you believe it?
Yeah, well, I do.
That's a fact.
I know a person who was brought to Les Miserables over in London, and they had, it wasn't the mobile phone. They were tuned into a championship match where their home county, Longford, hadn't progressed that far in the championship before, so they felt the need to keep abreast of the match while they were in the theatre. So, you know, it's a difficult dilemma. A lover of music, it should be said, and a lover of musical theatre, but also a lover of opportunities for their native Longford to progress in the championships.
Would I have a problem with handing in my phone going to a gig? Absolutely not.
No.
And the sooner they introduce it, the better, in my opinion. It makes your life a lot easier. It introduces a little bit of discipline into how people behave themselves when they walk through the theatre doors.
All right, Paul, it's not limited to the theatre, is it?
No, it certainly isn't, Colin. You'll find it at football games as well.
What's your own experience?
Well, I've seen people, they're no sooner sitting down in their seats as they're up again, out to the bar, out for drink. Not just one pint, you might see somebody coming in with 3 pints and he has half of it spilt before he gets to his seat and it possibly spilled over. No, I haven't had it spilt on me, but I've seen people's having alcohol poured over them, accidentally. Yeah.
I've seen somebody fall. I've seen somebody fall from the row behind onto a child in front. In fact, I had to stop them falling on the child myself and hold them up. Yeah. Well, you know, if they're going one way with 4 pints, they're going to be going the other way to either get more or empty the 4 pints at some point as well.
And then the other thing you have is people coming in well tanked up before the game and they're in and out of the toilet continuously. And you're up and down the seat and you're missing vital parts of it. You know, it could be a close match. You're missing vital parts of it because of...
Yeah. And the standard of conversation with a group of people drinking pints, I mean, they think it's improving and it's getting more and more witty and it's sometimes been broadcast for the benefit of the audience from three. The worst thing to do in those situations is to laugh and encourage the person, because by pint number 4, it starts getting a bit repetitive.
Yeah, and you know, in a lot of cases, these people have no interest in the match at all. They're just there for the occasion. They have no interest whatsoever in the match. They don't even know who's playing, who the players are, nothing.
Right. Maybe they're drinking away their sorrows, Paul, at the moment. And by the way, when you say football, it's soccer you're talking about there. So, you know, what do you make of the state of play at the moment?
Oh, it's a shambles. An absolute shambles. It was embarrassing watching that game the other night. You know, I could accept a team being beaten, but a team that's put in absolutely no effort, they had no idea what the plan was, they were absolutely clueless.
Right. Well, Caoimhín Kelleher knew what the plan was, and the plan was to keep goals out as possible.
And Evan Ferguson tried his best, but the rest of them were a washout. An absolute washout.
Right. Embarrassing. Well, the FAI has given their full backing to the manager to the end of this campaign, which may or may not be something that's causing him some concern. But would you take the step of letting him go and then have another 8-month hunt for his successor?
Well, they have no choice but to give him their backing, because they can't afford to pay him off. There are millions and millions in debt. They don't have the money to pay him off, so they have no choice but
to
see out his contract, you know, the situation they're in. And I'd say it would be very easy to count the people in the Aviva the next year. Very easy.
Well, I mean, in good times and bad, there's been good crowds. Did you see the RTE panel the other night, Shay Given, talking about heartbreak and devastation?
I did. And it's funny enough, today I was just going through TikTok and I seen the penalty shootout between Ireland and Romania back in the 1990 World Cup. And my granddaughter was sitting down watching us together, and we were saying, "Oh, if only those times came back again, I can't see them in my lifetime anyway." There's no. And even I watched the other 31s there last Tuesday as well, and there's nothing really coming there either, you know.
All right, thanks, Paul. Your line is breaking up again a bit there. It's going in and out. I don't know whether that's the. Whether the sorrow is weighing down the phone line there. But thanks for joining us. Annette, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Colin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, good. Yeah, I just had the point to make. I was saying to your researcher there that we were at a play up in Kilkenny earlier this year. It was Pat Kinnevan.
Hang on.
I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah, hold that thought, Annette, because we're going to take a quick break and get the full benefit of your wisdom after that.
Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Is it always possible to stay off your phone in a theatre, or should at all times you stay off the phone and not distract other members of the audience? We've heard from people who say, look, they're children of complex needs, they need to be on the phone, they need to be contactable. It's a choice between having some small element of a social life and staying on the phone or not going out at all. And other people who are saying, if you have to use your phone, don't go to a venue where you might be distracting other people. What do you think of it? 51551 for your texts, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps. Annette, sorry to interrupt you. Sorry, you begin again.
Okay. Yeah, we were, myself and my husband were up in Kilkenny there, the Watergate Theatre, earlier in the year to see Pat Kinnavan. He's a playwright and he writes his own plays and one-man shows. Excellent actor, actually. And we were in the theatre, and his shows, the settings are usually quite dark. And as someone else said, you know, the lights in the theatre go down. But a woman directly in front of us took out her phone. Now, there was no message or anything to say that she was being contacted in an emergency. There were just photographs. So Pat Kinnavan, in the middle of his performance, stopped and looked around, and he said something, words to the effect, "I see you have your phone out. Do you think I can't see the light shining in your face?" he said to her. And that kind of ripple went through the audience there, and she put it away and straight away.
How far towards the front? I mean, how far into the theatre was she? Was she up near the front or down the back? Or
I think we were about five. She was about five rows back, I'd say, from the front.
Right, and could you see it?
And
you could see what she was looking at, could you?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but there were pictures as far as I can remember. It wasn't like a text message, because I understand perfectly where Breda and Grace are coming from. If they need their phones, that's a different matter altogether. But like a lot of the other callers were saying as well, we've been at the theatre when people just seem to take out their phones willy-nilly, you know, and checking them all the time. You know, I don't know.
And you're involved in theatre and performance yourself, are you?
Well, I have been. For years, yeah, we've been involved. Our family is involved for a long time. My father was an actor, and I haven't acted on stage only once or twice. I'm more behind the scenes person.
Right.
From making the tea to selling programmes and tickets and set dressing and all that sort of stuff. So that's where my skills lie.
Right.
It's meeting the public.
The Panto Society in New Ross, is it?
Well, I'm the president of the Pantomime Society at the moment.
Right.
Our family have a long tradition with pantomime. So it's an honour for me to be the president of that at the moment, to represent my family and those gone before me. I have family. My own children are involved in theatre, and my sister is an actress as well. She's very involved in the New Ross Drama Society. So I would be involved a long time. But I think the phone use is becoming more of a nuisance. I think, obviously, I've been involved in theatre since before phones, mobile phones were invented. But I just think people just seem to be using them all the time.
And how are theatres coping with them?
Well, they do make the announcement, you know, turn your mobile phone off, or if you have to put it on silent. But I think some people disregard that. It's like one of your other callers said. She said she doesn't say, you know, maybe people don't realise the effort that has gone in to putting on a production. And how hard that the actors, you know, and everybody involved work to put this performance on stage. So it's a bit disrespectful to them.
Is it okay to whip it out during a panto, you know, and use the light on your phone to wave in the air for the sing-along or, you know, record a bit of it?
I don't know about that either.
You don't think so, no?
Well, no, and I think when you're recording, then you're distracting from the people that are sitting behind that want to see the show. And sometimes I think, well, you're recording and you put it up on social media, you're spoiling the element of surprise then for the people that are still waiting to go and see the show.
Right.
But then it can turn it around and people say, well, it's a good advertisement for the shows that are on.
All right.
There's no recording allowed in drama anyway, I don't think there's anything. It's mainly pantos and musicals maybe that are a bit more relaxed. That's, I don't know. Locally anyway. I don't know about nationally or anything like that.
And did it all go back to normal with Pat Kinnavan afterwards, after he called out the audience?
Yeah, it did. But I thought it was a great statement from, and bringing
to the point that, you know, I can see you actually with your phone. Some people probably maybe think that they can't be seen, but everybody can see them. But the point as well I was going to make about the brightness on your phone, if you actually turn down the brightness when you're in the theatre, if you have to receive an important message, don't have it so bright that the minute it's turned on, everybody around you can see it.
Mm.
Maybe that's a way around that then as well. Because you want people to be able to go out, you know, I understand Breed and Gracie's position. They want to be able to have some time out for themselves as well.
All right.
You know.
Yeah. Andrea O'Reilly, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colin. We were very lucky that we got tickets for the benefits show for the Weir at the last minute. And we were treated to Raiders of the Lost Ark in the middle of it. And this is an intense play. It's an intense drama. No breaks, you know. And it was so distracting. It was very disrespectful to the actors, to Brendan Gleeson, to Nage, and the girl from Wolf Hall. I can't remember the names. But it was such a brilliant production. The lack of respect was just outrageous, I felt. Now, it didn't distract. We just kind of went, oh, typical, you know. We had a great day. There was a standing ovation for Sean Rocks as well. And the whole thing was just so wonderful. We wouldn't let it ruin. But in future, and particularly if I'm sitting behind someone, I'm going to tap in shame. And I'm going to say, here, turn off your phone. You know, I'm paying for, it's dear enough to go
what
to
kind
the
of, theatre. Yeah, what kind of phone? And just Tom Von Lawler, the aforementioned.
Tom Von Lawler,
yeah,
that's
Nidge
it,
and Kate yeah. Phillips is
Kate Phillips,
is the actor,
is,
the other actor you were trying to think of. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other act, all the other act. It was an absolute treat. Wonderful.
And are you saying the phone? Are you saying that the phone use was widespread the night you went as well?
No, it wasn't, and that's the reason why it was so annoying.
Right.
Everybody else was there, you know, really getting into it. It was a brilliant performance, and it was so special because it was a benefit for St. Francis Hospice and for Sean Rock's family. And we had a standing ovation instead of a minute's silence. And just as well, we probably hadn't a minute's silence because someone's phone would have gone off. But the thing about it was a great, great experience. And it was something we didn't expect to do because we left it too late to get tickets for the ordinary shows. And when the benefit concert came on, we were able to get tickets.
Right.
You know? So I'm going to tap and shame. I don't care. I'll probably be done for assault or whatever. But I think if someone is sitting in front of you, you should be able to tap them and say, turn that off.
Yeah,
well, you know?
I suppose you can probably lean in and say, excuse me, could you see what they were doing on their phone, the people who were using their phone?
No, this was, I wasn't near them.
All right.
It was just a ringtone and it went right through Raiders of the Lost Ark in the middle of an intense drama. And I do accept, but these aren't the people I'm talking about. The people I'm talking about, I just can't understand. They must come by money soft.
Well, you just get up.
They weren't cheap tickets and they were there just letting it ring on, whatever, and have it everybody else. But you look, nowhere is sacred. We were in Knock there. We did the Pilgrims of Hope, and we were in Knock saying a decade of the Rosary. This guy came in with his phone. He took photos of the big mosaic in the Basilica. Then he was there was a small statue of Our Lady. He was taking a photo of it from different angles. And then in the heel of the reel, which I was trying not to laugh. The Rosary went out the window, and he can tell you. He took the sign away and took a photo of the statue of Our Lady. Now,
right. What did the sign say?
Maybe
no photographs.
No, it said it gave the story of the particular statue of Our Lady, whatever. You know, when people would come in, they could see, oh, this is, you know, Our Lady of the Rosary, what have you, you know. But did he have to do it? The priest was on the altar. We were saying a rosary, and he walked in and started taking photographs and rearranging the furniture in front of us.
And did he not kneel down and join in? I mean, he wasn't there for the rosary at all, was he not?
He provided great entertainment for us. Just looking at, can you believe this? Nowhere is safest.
Maybe the priest could have looked down
Brendan,
on him and...
Brendan Gleeson and the Weir or the Rosary and not. Forget about it. So I think people like me and who pay... Like, I paid to go and see Brendan Gleeson. I didn't pay to go in and hear someone's ringtone.
Fair enough.
I do appreciate about people who have emergency calls and all that. But those people, if you have an emergency call, you usually will sit at the edge. You will, dampen your phone, the tone and everything else. I'm talking about the people who are, I have to go and see Brendan Gleeson because, you know, that's the thing to do. Right. But while I'm there, I'm going to watch a football match from...
Okay, well, look, I mean...
Azerbaijan or something,
if you're talking about the Armenia match, I'm sure there are people who regret watching that in the first place. Listen, as a fan of Indiana Jones, maybe...
You wouldn't switch off your phone.
you may train yourself in the use of a bullwhip and you can snap phones out of people's hands and then roll out under the door before it closes. Andrea, thanks for calling. We'll be back in a sec. Trasa Walsh, how are you doing today?
Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for calling in. You heard the promo earlier in the week where we were talking about people dealing with grief.
I did indeed, and I have to say, a memory just shot into my head from 2009. Quite a beautiful memory, but it has always left me with unanswered questions, I suppose. So my son Grode, who was 23, died quite tragically in October 2009.
Oh, and sorry to hear about that.
Thank you very much. I suppose in the aftermath of his death, I appeared to be going on with life as normal, but I just was really shut down. I was, just wanted to be alone, and social kind of interaction didn't really mean very much to me at all. And I should say I had done Irish dancing as a child and as a young girl,
right?
But hadn't danced for years. And at this stage, I was in my mid-50s.
Right, competitively.
And a friend of mine.
Did you do the feshes and the like, that kind of dancing?
Oh, I did as a child, as a young girl. But hadn't danced from the time I was maybe 18. So a friend who was also an Irish dancer called down to me one evening and said that she had heard of this. It was actually a Shannos class in the Cobblestone in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And she said, would you come? Now, I think girls are probably maybe 4 or 5 months dead at this stage. And I wasn't really into Shannos anyway. But I said, look, sure, do you know what? Kind of thought about it and I thought, okay. At first it was like, no, definitely not. And then I said, sure, I'll go along. But I was more in the hope that they would be doing traditional Irish dance.
Right.
So, went down to the Cobblestone. It was an American girl actually teaching the class, and we did Shannos probably for half an hour or so. And then I said, listen, would you consider doing just a reel or something, a traditional Irish dance? And the minute that music went on, it was almost like it came from somewhere inside me that I had forgotten about. Just the beat of the music and actually just to get up and do the dance. And I came alive, and it was probably the first time since his death that I actually thought, okay, there is still a light here somewhere.
And what did it wake up inside you, the dancing?
I have no idea. Like, afterwards I've thought about it, and I thought, was there something? I don't think any music would have done. So I think if it had been maybe a cha-cha or something, it wouldn't have had the same effect on me. It was something just deep inside me, and I'm possibly connected to the kind of very ancestral part of the Cayley music. But it reminded me a lot of, and I've watched the film a few times, Dancing with Lunasa. And it reminded me of that dance scene where they get up on the table and they dance with abandon. It was just as if the music touched something inside me that was able to give vent to the grief that I felt, although I was smiling from ear to ear. It was quite profound, and I continued to do the dancing for, she actually ran an Irish dance class, traditional Irish dance class after that, and I continued to do it for a long time till it stopped. But
is it something that, you had danced from childhood to about the age of 18 and that you had an instinctive reaction for it for so many years in your life that you couldn't help almost? It overrode even those strong feelings of grief you were feeling after losing Garaud, and something deeper from your childhood kicked in.
Yeah. And it was almost like that that dance found me again, you know, and at a time when I really, really needed it. But what struck me, I suppose, afterwards was two things. One, my friend was very, very brave to suggest it because an awful lot of people were tiptoeing around me and, you know, oh, she doesn't want to go out, we leave her alone. And, yeah, I suppose Charlotte just knew me well enough to suggest it. And also that, I suppose, I also was brave enough to go and do it because I found at the time that there's a lot of judgment about how people should grieve. And I don't think anybody intends it, and I'm sure I've often been the one, you know, passing the judgment myself at times. But to get up and go out and start dancing around as a middle-aged woman, you know, in a pair of hard shoes or whatever. And
well, that gets, you know, enough judgment even without grief being in the picture.
Well, exactly, yeah. But the thing is that, yeah, it was, I suppose, a lot of people pass judgment and think, oh, sure, look, she can't miss him that much if she's off there, you know, maybe drinking a pint and dancing, where actually I think we should just maybe just let people find their own way. And sometimes the way finds you. You don't have to go looking for it. Just it'll happen, right, you know.
Are you still dancing?
No, I would like to say yes. I've had two knee replacements, and the first one in 2016. And I remember when I went to the orthopaedic guy, he was like, what have you done to your knees? And we went through, I never thought of Irish dancing, and I was still dancing at this stage, and we went through all my activities, and then I mentioned Irish dancing, and he went, oh, for God's sake. So once I had the first knee replaced, he told me, no, you can do ballroom dancing, which had no appeal to me, but not Irish dancing. And that was another huge grief. Like, that was like, oh God, somebody has whipped something, you know, a tool away from me that I really need, you know. But no, I would, yeah, I actually find now if dancing goes on, I'll do the dance sitting on the chair without, I can't
just
keep
tap,
my feet easy.
Tap and the leg or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to Marion Kelly Parker, who makes mementos for people from the possessions of the people that they've lost. Before we do, is there anything you hung on to from Garode's life that reminds you of him?
Yeah, funny you should say that. I actually have, so at the time, just before Garode died, one of my daughters, I got married, and Garode was dressed up, which was unusual, in this lilac-coloured shirt. And then after he died, there were a few photos published, and he had this shirt on him, and I have that shirt. And it's, there's times I look and go, God, I do quilts and things like that, and thought I should probably incorporate it into a quilt, but just the idea of cutting it just doesn't feel right, you know, right. Yeah, hanging there in the wardrobe, and it makes me smile. When I look at it, it just makes me smile. So I think that's reason enough to keep it,
well,
you know.
As you say, people get judged for dancing. I'm sure there are people who judge people for wearing lilac shirts as well. So fair play to his bravery.
Pride and joy.
Right, very good. All right. Listen, I'm sure you miss him. I'm sure you miss him greatly.
Of course,
and thanks very much for sharing that with us.
No problem, Colin. Thanks a million.
Thank you. Bye. Marion. Good afternoon to you.
Hello. Hello, Colin. How are you?
Good. Sentimental Stitches.
Yeah, Sentimental Stitches by Marion.
Tell us about it.
That's me. It's 2 years old now this month, and it is basically using the clothes of deceased family members and turning them into keepsakes like bears or quilts or cushions. So everything from clothes to blankets to bedspreads that they may have used. I turn them into something that people can hold instead of them hanging in wardrobes like that lady before. And I totally understand that the step that people need to take from having a selection of their loved one's clothes and handing them over to somebody else to turn it into a keepsake is a really huge step for a lot of people.
Right.
But I feel like it's a really practical way that I can help people. You know, I'm kind of, you know, always, you know, trying to help out as much as I can, and to be able to ease another person's pain or their grief it's a lovely, lovely thing to be able to do.
Is it intimidating at all when somebody hands over a garment and you have to treat it with the care and produce something that, you know, is going to help them through their grief? Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, you know, you don't have a second chance to do this, you know, once you start cutting and sewing, you know, you have to keep going with it. But I always kind of take my time with how I'm designing it. I check with the people, is there any particular parts of the outfit or the item that they want highlighted? So it's not a rushed process. And I don't like to do that for people if they need time to kind of get going. And often I'll have inquiries and it'll take a year before they'll get back to me and say, okay, I'm ready now to have something made.
Okay. Can you tell us briefly what the hardest thing to make is?
Now, I haven't made anything from a child. I've made it from a young adult, and that was quite difficult.
Okay.
I initially had thought that making memorial keepsakes would be too hard, too emotional. But there were so many people that contacted me because my business, I also do baby clothes keepsakes. And that's what I had thought I would run with. But the number of requests I had for memorial ones, I just said, okay, I'm just going to try it. And the what I get back in people's appreciation and how much it means to them really makes it so worthwhile.
All right.
That, you know, it's all worth it.
Well, I'm sure if you're helping people with their grief, it's very rewarding as much as, you know, difficult with the emotional input with it as well. I'm sure people find it a great comfort. Marion Kelly Parker from Sentimental Stitches by Marion. Thanks for talking to us. Back in a minute.